Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Flissy. This is a podcast about records. Today's album is Her Nibs by Georgia Gibbs on Galaxy Series Recordings from 1960, catalog number 4876.
So this album comes from Everyday Music in Portland, and we were on a recent trip to Portland shopping for some records, and I guess shopping through the easy listening section, and Flissy picked this one out, I guess based on the title.
I did. It's so silly. Her Nibs. It rhymes.
Georgia Gibbs and Her Nibs.
Yeah.
All right. So do you want to tell us a little bit about this album?
So it is, this is obviously, it must be a budget recording. It says Galaxy Series 3 record set. This is the only one that was in the crate. So I don't know where, if it was a box set. The other two records are, have no idea what they are or where they were. And it has this picture of a couple hanging out in Venice, and it looks like so 50s with this like curly font, Georgia Gibbs, and then in nice big capital letters, Her Nibs in quotes. And then at the bottom it has the track listings for the album. And then on the back it has like this super vague description of Georgia Gibbs. Georgia Gibbs exemplifies what is right with American popular music. So it has a kind of generic thing about her. And then on the left is like a sidebar of all the available albums on the Galaxy series. And it's like a, there's like the Three Sons, there's some Louis Prima, there is some Lawrence Welk on there. And so it's kind of like a collection of easy listening and jazz from like the 40s and 50s.
Yeah. So with this album cover having sort of this couple looking longingly and lovingly at each other in front of like a gondolier, I mean, it seems to imply that this album is a sort of like a romantic album, right?
And yeah.
The track listing there, we have some tracks like I Feel So Smoochy and The One I Love in there.
Yeah, you keep coming back like a song. And so, you know, seems like an appropriate album to feature for upcoming Valentine holiday.
But I would say overall, it turns out it's not super a romantic album.
No.
But anyway, well, let's find out. Let's listen to our first selection. So this is my pick, and it is the second track on side A. It's called Ballin' the Jack. Let's take a listen.
Now first you put your two knees close up tight. You swing them to the left and then you swing them to the right. You step around the floor kinda nice and light. And then you twist around, oh. Your mind, stretch your loving arms way out in space. You do the eagle rock with such a style and grace. You put your left foot out and then you bring it back. That's what I call ballin' the jack. Do.
All right, Flissy, so what'd you think of this song?
You know, talking about like being Valentine-y or no, I would say this is not particularly Valentine-y. It's one of those songs that I put in the category of the hokey pokey.
Yes.
It's like an instructional dance. And it's got like a, you know, it's a pretty solid foxtrot. Like, you know, aside from it being a sort of random instructional dance song, there's nothing really that particularly stands out to me about this one, actually.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, if you went to like a wedding in like the early 60s or whatever, would you have this kind of instructional dance song? I mean, that seems like it's what is played today at weddings, but I don't know if that was always true or not.
Yeah, well, I don't think so, because this album was released in 1960. I think these, this is a compilation of songs that she recorded in the 50s. And the song Ballin' the Jack, I think, was written in the 1920s, maybe?
1913,
yeah. And so maybe in, like, 1914, maybe you'd be ballin' the jack. But I don't think that craze was It was a decades long phenomena, if it was ever a phenomena.
So you don't think that by the 60s people were still balling the jack?
I don't think so.
At weddings or other events? But I mean, I have to admit, I had picked the song because I had no idea what balling the jack meant. But I guess it is, I don't know, some sort of phrase that was taken up in railroading for meaning going full speed.
Right, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense in the context of the song.
No, it doesn't. And especially like in the context of these other sort of like potentially romantic titles. I'm like, that sounds dirty. It does. So it's not dirty. It's this good, clean 1950s fun.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about Georgia Gibbs?
So Georgia Gibbs was born Frieda Lipschitz in Worcester, Massachusetts. Born in August 17th, 1918. And her father died when she was 6 months old, and so she spent the next 7 years with her siblings in an orphanage. Her mother was a midwife, and so she wasn't able to stay home and take care of her own children. She was traveling around helping other people deliver babies, so eventually she did come back to pick up her kids. But by this time, Georgia Gibbs, she was like, I think 12, and she was old enough to kind of be at home and taking care of the rest of her siblings. So when she was in the orphanage, she sang in the yearly variety show, and she was, noted as a young person for her singing skills. And as a teenager, she got a gig singing at the Boston Ballroom and started touring with bands. So as a teenager, right away she started working as a professional musician pretty young. In the 1930s and 1940s, she worked as a freelance musician. She was made appearances on different radio shows. She sang with Artie Shaw and Tommy Dorsey and a whole bunch of big bands in the 30s and 40s. And during that time, she kind of worked like as a part of a group. And so she went by Freda Gibbs, I think, during that time. And then she changed her name to Georgia Gibbs in 1943. And in the 1940s, she made appearances on the Camel Caravan radio show with Jimmy Durante and Gary Moore. And that was from 1943 to 1947. And Gary Moore was the one that called her nibs, Miss Georgia Gibbs. And that was to imply that she was like a little person, but she had a big presence. Still, I'm like, what does her nibs mean? And so we reference good old Merriam-Webster, who says that the definition of nibs is an important or self-important person, usually used in the phrases his nibs or her nibs as if a title of honor. And I guess that phrase was came about around the 1810s. Apparently, it's kind of fallen out of fashion. I haven't heard anybody called her nibs in a while.
Yeah.
It's kind of cute, though. I do like that her title rhymes with her name.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1951, she signed with Mercury Records, and she was really known for her versatility as a singer. And she got some criticism for that because, she didn't really have her own unique sound. She could really sing just about anything, though she was mostly known for her romantic-style torch songs. And she also got a lot of criticism for whitewashing songs by Black artists such as Etta James and Laverne Baker. So Laverne Baker said, I read the story in several different places, that Laverne Baker took out life insurance and put it in Georgia Gibbs's name because she was like, well, if I die, then Georgia Gibbs is going to be out of business because nobody's writing songs for her but me. So it sounds like a lot of Black artists were bitter about this, that she would get recognition for songs that they wrote and performed. And this Etta James's songs she sang, and the arrangement was pretty much like the exact same way that Etta James sang it, and she got more famous for it. And so there's like a lot of bitterness about that. And later on in her life, she claimed that she really had little say in what she recorded, and that was true of a lot of musicians. So she was like, I feel badly about this, but like, you know, she's under contract and she's just saying whatever her producers put in front of her. And she's well known for the song Kiss of Fire, which made it to number one in 1952. And she continued to sing and perform in the 1960s through the 1990s, but definitely the 50s was her heyday. And she died in 1996.
All right. Well, do we want to listen to your clip, Flissy?
Sure. I picked How Are Things in Glockamora.
And that is the second to last track on Side B. So let's take a listen.
Does it still run down to Donnycone through Killybegs, Kilkerry, and Kildare? How are things in Glockamora? Is that willow tree still weeping there? Does that laddie with the twinkling eye whistling by, and does he walk away sad and dreamy there, not to see me there?
All right. I don't know.
You have thoughts on this one?
not really. I mean, I think that the interesting thing, listening to Georgia Gibbs in some of her other albums, as it seems like, I guess, sort of as you talked about in her bio, where, you know, she was sort of, you know, given songs to sing by her producers and sort of sang a variety of things, you know, covering sort of different genres and things. I think it is interesting that she has sort of like this, I don't know, chameleon-like singing voice, that it's just like she doesn't really stand out in any way, but she sort of just sounds kind of like, I don't know, like vaguely reminiscent of someone else, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody you could just use to, you know, sing, you know, a lot of, I guess, you know, hit songs or pop songs or whatever. And, you know, I guess if you couldn't get the big name, you could just rely on Georgia Gibbs. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just my way of saying that it's like, I think everything about her singing and her voice is fine, but nothing really stands out.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Although I think that this song is, I think this is really demonstrative of her way of singing her torch songs. Like, it's, I think she in this one is like the embodiment of 1950s melodrama and wistfulness. So yeah, that's what, and even that I'm like, well, like the 50s melodrama and wistfulness is almost like this totally like pasty white thing itself. It's just like it is like this affectation of melodrama, and not really, it doesn't necessarily have any particular depth to it. So, and that might be the fault of the song also. This was from Finian's Rainbow, which I don't know. Maybe the Broadway production of this is okay, but the movie version with Fred Astaire and Petula Clark is just like among the worst examples of movie musicals. Like, it's just so bad. And I think that I like...
That's one of Fred Astaire's last musicals, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think he should have
called it quits earlier. Yeah. That movie was not his fault, though. Like, that, there are so many bad things about that movie. Petula Clark sings the song in that movie, and I think Georgia Gibbs out-sings Petula in this particular version.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I'll give her that. I mean, I think the other thing that's interesting, I mean, this album doesn't sort of demonstrate any of her sort of Latin-ish songs, but I think it's sort of, I feel like her singing of Latin songs sort of exemplifies what was going on in America in this time, where it's sort of like the Latin, the only thing that it is just sort of like a affect in your voice or something.
Yeah. And that Kiss of Fire song that she recorded definitely has that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, I guess maybe some of that was actually brought about through
Carmen Miranda.
Yeah. I think some of that was brought about through Carmen Miranda, who I think, you know, sort of played that up with like mispronouncing words and things. But yeah, definitely very interesting that I think, you know, Georgia Gibbs was pretty versatile in that way, and that she could sing in these different styles, even if, you know, I guess they're all sort of inauthentic.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think like her way of singing is just like, it's like so 50s, and it's like so very specific, like adult, easy listening 50s.
Yeah. And in that sense, I don't know.
It's a success in that regard, I guess.
Yes. And it finds a place in our library because of that.
Yeah. And probably other people's as well.
So what do you think of this album? What did you like and what didn't you like about it?
I mean, overall, like I think it's okay. I think it's an interesting pick to talk about on this show because I'm like, when we listen to it, I mean, I picked it out because of the cover, as I often do. And then when we listen to it, I'm like, I don't know if I want to talk about this on the show. It's like, it's kind of forgettable. It's okay. And in terms of Valentine's Day, it's like, it's not nearly as romantic as it could be. I mean, like, there's this old man Moe song about how Moses kicked the bucket. Like, that's not romantic. And then there's like this feud and fighting song where like couples like beating on each other. So yeah, it's like, it's mediocre. In our copy, it looks clean, but it's got a lot of surface noise on it. And I'm just like, it's okay.
Yeah, I would say the things that I like about it are that, well, it has a, you know, interesting title. I thought the name of the song that I picked, Ball in the Jack, was amusing. It's got some, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's got some sort of interesting selections. But overall, I think that I would find it sort of not, you know, not very outstanding in any way. It's just sort of, I don't know. Not to denigrate it, but I would say it's kind of like a 2-star recording.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not, not something that you're going to like, you know, it's not going to become your favorite album, but, you know, maybe something that you could have on in the background, or if you had it digitally, you know, make it part of some sort of shuffle playlist. But, I don't know. Yeah, overall, I would say, I don't know, maybe thumbs down on buying this.
Yeah, unfortunately, I would pass this up if I were to see it again.
This specific album, no. But, I mean, maybe like one of like a Best of Georgia Gibbs album or something might be worth picking.
Well, although this is probably what this is intended to be, is like a compilation.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to this, I guess, the Best of Georgia Gibbs, the Mercury Years. And I mean, that has like, I guess, you know, the songs that were considered her hits, and you know, it has the track Autumn Leaves, which we featured last week on our Stefan Grappelli album. And so, I mean, that one is worth, I think, checking out if you have access to it on a streaming service. But overall, Georgia Gibbs probably not going to be one of the artists that you're going to collect, you know, her and all of her work or whatever. So, all right, well, for more, you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/37. As always, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Living in Hi-Fi. For longer correspondence, you can email us at feedback@livinginhifi.com. Next week, we have something that I discovered while doing an earlier album, and something that an artist that I've really come to enjoy. So stay tuned for that. And also, as a reminder, we have
Baltimore Record Bazaar.
Yes. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah. So we're going to be at the Baltimore Record Bazaar on the 26th at the Sunday from 12 to 6 p.m. at the Windup Space in Baltimore. So we'll have a couple albums available for sale. Maybe we'll put this one in our bin. And we'll also have our record cleaner with you. And so we can clean up your records, get you all set up with a fresh sleeve so your stuff sounds nice and bright and shiny. And we got coasters. Come say hi. Tell us what you think of our show.
And you can always say hi to her nibs, Flissy. So thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.